Last Sunday, I saw a movie Sunday evening called The Voice of Hindrajob. It is a heartbreaking and maddening true story of a five-year-old girl named Hindrajob. Hind was traveling in a car with her aunt and uncle and four cousins. And they were killed, they were attacked by Israeli forces. And the attack killed her aunt and uncle and three cousins. And Hind and one cousin was left alive, hiding in the car amongst the dead bodies, with Israeli tanks and gunfire all around them. The cousin managed to use a cell phone to call the Palestine Red Crescent emergency line. And then the cousin died from injuries. So 5-year-old Hind was now hiding in a car amongst the dead bodies of her whole family. The movie tells the story from the perspective of the Palestine Red Crescent dispatchers who received the call. They are able to maintain contact with Hind for hours and hours while they frantically try to get approval from Israel to send an ambulance to save her. They only had one ambulance and rescue team left in Gaza because Israel had blown up and killed the other eight. If they didn't get approval from Israel to send the ambulance into the area, they risked their last rescue team being blown up and killed. The last ambulance was only 8 minutes away, but unable to respond until they could get approval. The film uses the actual recordings of the emergency call, so we hear Hind's 5-year-old voice throughout the movie, her words, her fear, her innocence. And the dispatchers are played by actors. Among the dispatchers, there is a younger man who answers the call immediately and is the first one to answer the call and just immediately wants to save this little girl and risk everything to do so. Then there is a young Muslim woman who is the supervisor of the call center. And she, at first, at the beginning of the movie, is at the end of her day trying to get out. And go home after a long day, but eventually gets drawn into this call and becomes the one who spends the most time on the phone with Hind. Hind is saying things like, "They're shooting at us. The tank is right next to me. We're in the car. The tank is right next to us. I'm so scared. Please come. Please take me. Please, will you come?" And by the end, some young supervisor is just completely falling apart at the frustration of being unable to save this little girl. And perhaps the most tragic figure in the movie is the middle-aged man who is responsible for the coordination and final approval to send the ambulance. He keeps pictures on his wall of the eight other rescue teams that they've lost, that have been killed. He knows all the names of all the rescuers that have died, and he knows their families. At one point, he draws with a marker on a glass wall, trying to explain to the younger man how the approval process works. And he's like, "We have to do this, and then we have to get this process." And he starts to make an infinity sign in this maddening loop. You may know the end of this story. Again, this is a true story that's been investigated and verified by news and human rights organizations. In the end, they finally get approval for the ambulance to go rescue this little girl. It arrives on the scene right next to her car, and Israel blows it up as if they were waiting for it. And then they shoot up the car and they kill Hindrajob. It's hard to express the experience of watching this movie. It's heartbreaking and maddening and enraging, and I'm still processing it. But one question that I asked myself, which I think is especially relevant to our text today: why do we watch movies like this? Why do we watch any movie about a real-life tragedy or injustice, a story where we know the end, a story that will break our hearts? Why do we watch movies about the Holocaust or the genocide of Native Americans or slavery or Vietnam or Palestine? I think we have at least a partial answer to that question in our text this morning, and it's a little hidden. It's that strange reference to Moses holding up a serpent in the wilderness. This is a reference to Numbers chapter 21. It's one of the many stories in which the Hebrew people are wandering in the wilderness after they've been liberated from slavery in Egypt. Moses has led them out into the wilderness, and God has provided miraculous food for them every day, and yet they complain. Why did you bring us up from Egypt to kill us in the desert, where there's no food and water, and we detest this miserable bread? The miserable bread is the miraculous manna that God has been providing every day. God responds to this complaint by punishing the people by sending poisonous snakes into their camp. The snakes start biting people and people start to die. Moses begs God for mercy, and God responds with instructions. Make a poisonous snake and place it up on a pole. Whoever is bitten can look at it and live. Moses made a snake out of bronze and he placed it on a pole as instructed. And if a snake bit someone, that person could then look at that bronze snake and live. They would be healed. So that snake up on a stick is what Jesus is comparing himself to in John 3. But before we get to John, let's just appreciate what a weird story this is. How does looking at a bronze snake heal someone from a snake bite? One way to think about it is that sometimes we can't begin to overcome something until we look at it. Sometimes we have to see and name the thing that is harming us before we can address it. Sometimes we have to hold something up to the light in order to start the healing. This is not so different, perhaps, than what they do in 12-step groups, where a person gets in front of the group and introduces themselves as an alcoholic, for instance, holding up the thing that is killing them, the alcoholism, naming it, shining a light on it, is the first step to overcoming it. Another example would be the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was formed after apartheid in South Africa. The process involved both victims and perpetrators publicly telling their truth, having Black South Africans on the record publicly about what the ways that they were harmed by white South Africans. That gave those who were the victims a power. It gave them a dignity to tell their stories. It shone light on what would have festered or poisoned them if left in darkness. And the perpetrators of the abuse, in particular the soldiers who were just following orders, if their testimony met certain criteria, they could have a chance for leniency or even to be absolved. The priority of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was the telling of the truth. It was accurately describing what happened. Only when the truth of apartheid was held up and acknowledged by everyone could there be hope for reconciliation and healing. In our text this morning, Jesus says that when he is lifted up on the cross in the crucifixion by the Roman Empire, it's going to be like that. It will be a revealing of the truth. It will be a moment of healing for the world. But there's a complexity to the crucifixion that is not there in the holding up of a snake on a pole. In the act of holding up a snake, the only thing being held up is that which causes us pain and death. But in the image of Jesus on the cross, two things are held up. One is the cross, the instrument of death and torture, the symbol of violence and domination and evil of the empire. And we look at that reality and we name it and we shine a light on this tool of the empire that is killing us. But then also Jesus is there, nailed to that cross, the human one, the innocent victim of the empire's dominance and violence, the example of love manifest in human form. And it's all held up there in the image of Jesus on the cross. So maybe it's not so different from the alcoholic again, who says, "My name is Joan and I'm an alcoholic." She holds up everything, her name, who she is, what's killing her. Maybe Jesus on the cross isn't so different from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission either, holding up the victim and the perpetrator, restoring dignity to the victim, offering the chance for the perpetrator to begin restoring their own humanity. Why do we watch movies like The Voice of Hind Rajab? Why do we watch devastating true stories about how the worst of humanity clashes with the best of humanity throughout history? Well, for one thing, it's because we have to shine a light on that which is killing us. We have to look at it if we hope to overcome it. That's the snake on the stick. But we add a critical complexity when we look also at the victims and we keep their voices alive. There are horrible things happening all over the world, and we are all caught up in a web of responsibility for those things. But often those things are happening so far away, in Minneapolis or Palestine or anywhere around the world, and all we have to help us feel a connection to these things that are happening are the stories that are told through a video by a witness, that are described by an eyewitness, that are in well-written books or documentaries or movies. In many of the horrible situations perpetrated by the global powers, one of the most important things we can do then is to be a witness. Our collective healing begins when we open our eyes and see what's killing us and name who is being killed. Now, I understand people don't want to be traumatized or desensitized to the horrors of the world. And we can get drawn into an obsessive and compulsive watching and rewatching of these horrible videos. And the algorithms of social media are designed to keep our eyes on the screen, not for our benefit and not for the benefit of society, but for the profit of the empire. So we have to be aware of that. We have to be thoughtful and careful and intentional about how we're going to witness and testify to what's going on around us. That may involve finding a few trustworthy sources that we go to. Ideally, they're sources from among the communities that are being targeted the most. Or it may involve intentionally limiting the times that we watch a horrible thing. Or it may involve sticking to careful, accurate written descriptions, or watching well-done documentaries, or retelling of true stories through film. There's lots of different ways we can approach it. Yesterday, in one of my Signal chats, I saw a call from clergy in Minnesota for clergy around the world to watch the video of yesterday's killing of Alex Preddy. And then the call was to make a video of ourselves describing what we saw and to post it. The instructions were not to not interpret it, to not make assumptions, but just describe what is visible in the video. Who is present? What actions occurred? The sequence of events? What is clearly seen on the screen? The goal of the action were, quote, one, combat misinformation and false government narratives. Two, create a public record of what witnesses actually see. And three, speak with moral clarity and collective discipline. All of this keeping in mind George Orwell's famous quote, the party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and your ears. It was their final and most essential command. So here's what I wrote as I watched the video of Alex Preddy. I see Alex Preddy and a woman in the street. Alex is filming an armed, masked man. I decided not to call them federal agents in my description because there was no evidence in the video that they were with any agency. I know who they were, but I'm writing what I see. The camera pans to the ground for a moment as if the person stumbles or is running. And when it comes back up, Alex seems to be pulling a woman away from a confrontation with the armed, masked man, while the armed masked man is pushing another woman down into the snow on the side of the road. Then Alex puts himself between the woman on the ground and the armed masked man. The armed masked man pepper sprays Alex. There is another woman now on the scene also trying to help the woman on the ground as the armed masked man continues to pepper spray both of them. Suddenly there are five or six armed masked men surrounding Alex and pushing him to the ground. I can no longer see Alex. He is on the ground, surrounded by men who seem to be struggling somewhat. Then one of the men near Alex's head starts hitting him in the head with his pistol. One man who doesn't even have on tactical gear like the others, he's just a guy in a coat with a mask, runs away from the tussle with what appears to be a gun in his hand. Now, I'll pause. The narrative I've heard is that Alex was a registered gun owner and had a permit to carry a concealed weapon. But sticking only with what I see this man in a coat run away from the struggle with a gun. And then I hear shots, not from that guy, shots from the tussle, at least three shots at first, and then maybe another five or six after a pause. The shots happen as the armed masked men are all backing away from Alex's body, and his body jerks on the ground with each shot. So that's my description of what I saw. And as difficult as that process was to do that, to write it out, I really found it helpful because these videos are just so chaotic and scary. It can be hard to slow down and really see what's happening and name it for what it is. I found it especially helpful to write down exactly what I was seeing with my eyes and hearing with my ears. And so I just offered that as one way of being intentional about what we are witnessing and how to handle all of these things. But in the spirit of John 3, I would say that testimony that I just shared with you isn't complete. What I described is the horrible violence of the empire. I described the thing that's killing us. I described the snake on the stick or the cross. But John 3 invites us to complete the picture by seeing the victim also. So in that spirit, I've learned since then that Alex Preddy was an ICU nurse at a Minnesota VA hospital. His supervisor said of him, "Alex is a good, kind person who lived to help. He supported critically ill veterans at the hospital, and he was researching how to prevent veterans from dying of colon cancer." The more we come to know him, the more completely complete this testimony will be. Why do we watch movies like The Voice of Hindrejob? How do we watch videos of the killing of George Floyd or Renee Good or Alex Preddy? We do it because looking and opening our eyes and witnessing and testifying, right now it's one of the most powerful things we can do. Many of us are people who have tremendous power and privilege in so many areas of our life, but are feeling completely powerless right now. But we have the power of our eyes, and we have the power of our ears, and we have the power of our pens and our voices. We resist the empire with our eyes and our ears and our testimony. So decide how are you going to use your eyes and your ears in this struggle. Be thoughtful, be careful, be intentional, and be courageous. Look up at the snake, see the thing that's killing us, and see the people being killed. Name them, weep for them, and testify for them. Amen.